It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're exploring unexpected Iowa in a different way. We've been talking about some fine craftsmen who work on and create instruments for musicians all over the world. Now we're going to move on to different kinds of instruments, electronic instruments. The digital synthesizer was designed at the University of Iowa and has a fascinating backstory. And here to tell us all about it is Lorenz Fritz. He's professor of music at the University of Iowa, director of the electronic music studios, also at the University of Iowa. Hello, Larry.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Mm-hmm. Glad to be here.
And now I know that there was work being done on electronic music production around the world, but the digital synthesizer was designed at the University of Iowa. How did this come about? I mean, that some very influential people were involved in the creation of this instrument.
I should say so. So this has a very interesting story. When I first got the job here about 20 years ago, I tracked down the first faculty person that taught electronic music here and talked to him on the phone. Very charming man, Robert Schellenberg. And he gave me the story on how the studios came into existence. Apparently, James Van Allen had a graduate student who was interested in building a digital synthesizer. And in order to get funding for the student, Van Allen approached the School of Music and said, you guys need to have some electronic music studios, and you need to have my student, James Cessna, be the graduate assistant or something like that. And so, lo and behold, we got the money. We got a faculty hire, which was Robert Schellenberg. And so it's an odd sort of turnabout where you hire your teaching assistant, and then you hire the faculty person to mentor them.
Well, and James Van Allen, obviously a very, very famous physicist, somebody that we all know at least a little bit about. What was he doing telling the university that they needed an electronic music department? I mean, that's very strange.
Well, I can only imagine that, you know, he had his, you know, head to the ground, you know, listening, you know, to what people are doing with technology. Music technology moves very, very quickly. I should say that music technology tends to adapt from current technology or new-ish technology. So, for example, when Benjamin Franklin was able to capture a lightning charge and store it in something called a Leyden jar, sort of like a battery, an instrument inventor in France made something called the Electrique Clavecin Electrique. And it was a keyboard arrangement. And when you pressed a key, you turned off or turned on an electrical charge to one of a series of bells. And then the bell would take on that charge and it would go ding. And if you left the key down, it would then take on the opposite charge and it would go ding on the other side. And it would just go ding, 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 ding. And so each note on this instrument had its own set of bells. So,
all right. So James Cessna was the student of James Van Allen, and he started working on his thesis about the digital synthesizer, and he actually created one. I mean, what was this machine like?
Well, it wasn't a synthesizer in the way that we're used to seeing them now. It didn't have a keyboard. It was programmed to play via code or punch cards or something. And it was housed in an equipment rack about 19 inches wide and 5 feet 5 feet tall.
Not a small.
I don't take this one on the road. Nor any of the early music synthesizers.
And what would it have sounded like?
Kind of like a cheap video game of, I'm serious, sorry, but it is, a cheap video game from the, you know, early 80s or something.
Now, try to put this advancement into context for me. Like I said, I mean, this wasn't the only place where the idea of electronic music was being explored. But how important is this synthesizer?
Well, it's extremely important in the sort of the history of electronic music. Before the Cessna synthesizer, an engineer at Bell Labs named Max Matthews was using the computer to synthesize and play music. And so this operated, the Cessna synthesizer operated in a somewhat similar way, but everything in there was dedicated just to play, just to generating these sounds and controlling them. About a year later, a very good friend of mine, James Beauchamp at the University of Illinois, built something called a harmonic tone generator. And that would allow you to break a sound down into its sort of sine wave frequency components, and you could sort of add a sine wave to it and build up timbre by doing that. And I think the pitch was static. I think it was only one fundamental note, and then you just were able to sort of dial in the other notes that made a more rich and full timbre.
So this was a step along the way. And it is interesting to note that James Cessna, who did his thesis on the digital synthesizer, did not make this his life's work. He went on to design the original time-of-flight circuitry for the Energetic Particles Detector Composition Telescope for the Galileo spacecraft.
That's Mr. Cessna. I tried to follow, trace out his career and so forth. And, tragically, it appears that he died at a somewhat young age. And I just don't know any history about him, beyond that. I wish I did.
So part of the real offshoot of this was the creation of the electronic music studios at the University of Iowa. So not only was the digital synthesizer designed, this created this opportunity for electronic music exploration at the university.
Yeah, we've been quite lucky. I guess we're in our 50th year this year. And we had a faculty, hire to oversee the studios and teach the courses. And that's a critical component, because you don't want a studio with a bunch of technology and then students running wild in there. I have a hard enough time keeping my students in check for that sometimes. And so the equipment for the studios was sort of acquired through the time-honored way of borrowing in quotes, some oscillators from the physics department, a tape recorder from the recording studios, and what have you. And then it would sort of be cobbled together to produce electronic music. And this was the model that all studios throughout the world followed. In Europe, they were all based on radio stations. And so they would use the equipment normally found in a radio station and then hook it together in such a way that it would produce sound. And then composers would be invited to come in and, write music with the new medium.
Now, before we run out of time, I want to talk about some new ways that electronic music are changing. But I want to talk about some other really interesting electronic music connections in the state of Iowa. And I want to go way back in time and talk about, and I may say his name wrong, Thaddeus Cahill?
Yes.
All right. And he invented the telharmonium.
Mm-hmm.
That was considered to be the first synthetic instrument. Tell me about him.
Okay. Yeah, that would definitely win the prize for being the first synthesizer, because it was in every conception of the idea of the synthesizer since. That was the basic working model that all other synthesizers have followed. Cahill was born in Iowa in 1867 and moved with his family to Oberlin, Ohio, and he graduated from the college there, worked as a court stenographer, and became interested in steno machines and typewriters. So he had a parallel career in building synthesizers and building better and better electric typewriters. So the first synthesizer that he built was completed in 1897, and it uses a system of tone wheels that rotate at specific frequencies. And those frequencies, when they're sounding together, produce a pitch with a tone and a tone color and so forth. And it's the same system that Hammond organs have used throughout the 20th century and on into today. His last version of it was the telharmonium was humongous. It was it weighed 200 tons.
Oh my goodness!
And was installed in a basement below an entire city block in New York at the intersection of 39th and Broadway. And so the synthesizer was sitting down there. It had its own coal electrical generating plant, so they had their own electricity covered. And I happened to know someone who knew someone who heard it. And he was told that when you tossed in more coal, that the pitch of the synthesizer would raise a little bit. So
we actually have a sound sample of teleharmonium music. This is taken from a documentary that's available on YouTube called Magic Music from the Teleharmonium. But here we go. I can see why musicians didn't just run out and buy their own, given the size. And it does. I mean, it sounds a lot like an organ.
Yeah, yeah. There were some necessary technology that really needed to become available before you could make a practical synthesizer or any electronic generating instrument.
The timeline of this is so amazing to me, though, because he was so far ahead of his time.
Yeah, yeah.
That's remarkable. Well, I want to talk about another person from Iowa who has made electronic music and really so much more possible, and that's Harry Ferdinand Olson. He was born in Mount Pleasant, Iowa. Tell me about him.
Well, he received his PhD from University of Iowa in physics in 1928 and got a job at RCA Labs, soon becoming in charge of acoustical research. And that's where he stayed for the rest of his life. He's a very well-known figure in electric audio. He invented microphones and loudspeakers. He made improvements on tape recording technology. But his real gift to the world of music was this thing called the RCA synthesizer. There were two of those, and the second one was the more famous one, and it was installed at Columbia University in 1957. This was a little bit smaller, but it did take up two walls in a small room, and the synthesizer is now bolted to the floor of a composer named Brad Garten, who's on the composition faculty at Columbia University.
Wow. So Iowans really had a lot to do with the development of electronic music. And things are continuing to change. In the world of electronic music, what would you characterize as really one of the latest developments, a new way to interact with electronic music, right?
Right. The biggest change, I think, has been, a long time coming, and it was foreseen for quite a while. But now the technology is good enough that it actually works pretty well. So the basic scenario is you bring out an instrument, say a violinist on stage, and the violinist starts to play. Well, then a microphone picks up that sound, and that sound travels through the microphone into a laptop computer, and then using a specific kind of software program, that software will quote unquote listen to what's being played, and so it can discern different pitches. It will know if you play a C or if you play a C sharp or if you play a D, and so composers then program these things so that whenever the violin, let's say, plays the note D, a certain kind of event happens, like a pre-recorded sound or a certain kind of processing that will go on with the instrument on stage.
So instead of a pre-programmed digital formula that you have to follow as a musician, instead this is making electronic music more dynamic, mm-hmm. and really making the musician even more at the center of it.
Right. Yeah. Sort of parallel with this interactive music is another trend where you would composer would compose like a music on a CD of background music. And then in a performance, an engineer, sound technician would start the CD playing back, and then the performer would read the music and through the music determine where he was in the piece and would play along with that recording. And that's a very good way to go. I still compose that way. I have less confidence in the ability of a computer doing accurate listening.
And Larry, I'm sorry, we are out of time. Thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure. Lawrence Fritz is professor of music at the University of Iowa, director of the Electronic Music Studios at the University of Iowa. We'll go out with a little Tainted Love by Soft Cell, which was one of the first Billboard hits to use a synthesizer. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Get away from